saw this morning is that we could take our just S injunction and we could come up with a simple potential for it. And when we came up with that simple potential, we could look at defining qubits, but they weren't the most convenient qubits because we had this infinite potential. And so even though in the tilted version of it, we ended up with some bound states, that's not enough, right? What we want to do is to end up with some very localized states. So what we want to do today is to look at local bound states and therefore that we could map to a qubit. And let's just go over this quickly. And we'll see how we modify the circuit. So we took our resistive shunted Josephson injunction with a capacitor, and we current biased it, and we had those three currents, and we knew again from Kirchhoff's laws that we're looking at the sum over those. And the JJ part we just used to identify a phase across there. The resistive part, of course, we got from Ohm's law, V equals IR. So I is equal to the voltage divided by the resistance. But the voltage we were happy to get from Josephson's equation, so H bar over 2E times R d phi dt. So we've related the both of those to phi. And then the capacitance we get trivially from saying that I is equal to C dV dt. And of course, we've already defined the voltage. So life is good. We have a second order differential equation. Now what we're going to do is to take this junction and we're going to current bias it with a loop. So the way one would think about this is to pattern a device that looks like this, where right here we would put in our tunnel junction. So here we have a superconducting ring. So just like where we started off in superconductivity, the first thing we talked about was flux quantization in a superconducting ring. We go back to a superconducting ring, but we interrupt it by a Josephson junction. Initially, it would have actually been interrupted just by something called a weak link. Just take the wire and pinch it so that you make, effectively, it has to carry greater current. So therefore, you would define a node in your system, the place where there can be a voltage. But we'll keep this model. And so now we still have the current that we're going to put across this junction. And then I'm going to since I want to, in an electrical circuit, keep track of the flux, then I need a circuit element that keeps track of the flux. So I need to explicitly put in an inductor into the circuit. Okay. So the inductor is going to be just that pattern, right? But that's okay. You know, it still has some inductance. And then we put our JJ. Exactly as it was before. All right. So now then we have this circuit. And it helps to give yourself one more degree of freedom to not make those two inductors the same. And when you see the answer at the end, you'll know why. You can calculate it anyway, either way, but it helps to do that. So let's just first look at the flux contained. So here, we want the flux in this ring, of course. We assume that this ring is going to be really big because there's a current source in there, right? There's some big active element. And so the current, so it's because that ring is going to be so big, the flux quantization, and there's always flux quantization, but it's going to be so small. We just forget about that piece. That you'll never see. It's in this small piece here that we're going to describe the circuit. Okay, so we've already seen the way this works. That effectively, what we have is the difference in the flux depends upon difference in the phase, depends upon this magnetic vector potential. And now again, this phase, maybe I should draw it as some script phase, is a wave function around this ring. Okay? So again, we integrate over the ring, but as we integrate over the ring, of course, we have a phase difference here. Right? When we integrated over the ring in the first class in superconductivity, there was no phase difference. It was a continuous ring. So at the end of the day, we end up with an expression that looks like 2 pi n plus phi over phi naught. And this is going to be the phase across the junction. So remember, we got almost the same expression before. Okay, but this had to be zero. Right, and so we ended up with the flux quantization. Here, we break the flux quantization because we can have a phase jump across the JJ. Okay. So, now then we go and the rest of it is simple electronics. We've got this piece here. So we have the current, and of course, the current is going to be split between these inductors. And so what we're going to do is we're going to call this current I, okay? And this current, of course, is just I dc minus I. Okay, all we're doing is looking at, again, Kirchhoff's current law applied to that node. Now we know what the flux is, because we've defined the inductors, right? So the flux is equal to IDC minus I through this particular inductance, right? So we get some flux. And we'll subtract 1 minus alpha L. Okay, so now then we say, oh yes, I've got on this side, this current flowing through this piece, and therefore I have a certain flux. Now on this side of it, this current flowing through this piece, and I have a certain flux. And of course, the flux over the whole thing is going to be the difference between those two. Yeah.
Magnetic fields are
distributed. If I put a current through an inductor, I get a flux.
Yeah, but not a magnetic flux.
Sure, I do.
But I think the magnetic fields are parallel.
So, are you worried about this negative side?
No. Well, that comes from the way you rotate them.
Yeah, yeah. So then I don't know what your question is.
So how do the magnetic fields define the magnetic flux?
They're coming out of this. Right? Remember, here's what I have. I have a ring, and there's a current through it. Right?
Yeah.
And so are you concerned that I have the same current flowing in these two rings? If I just had a DC current in a resistive loop, and I flew it, let's just think about wires. Why we have a wire. And I put it like this, right? And I have exactly the same resistance on both sides. There really is a resistor in life, right? And I have the same inductance on both sides, and I flow it through there. I still generate a magnetic field, right? I don't generate a magnetic field at the center.
Right.
But I would still generate a magnetic field,
yeah. No, right? What I'm thinking about is
but here, these two are different.
True. But I'm thinking about if I have an inductor, which is a solenoid in this
yeah.
way, then the magnetic fields would be in this.
But yeah.
But what you're saying here is like they should be like in this.
I have a current, time-dependent current, flows in those directions,
yeah.
right? About each wire, I'll create a magnetic field.
Well, yeah, those
right?
would have.
So what is your question?
But those solenoids won't.
But this is just a symbol, right? This is the geometry.
Okay.
This is just a symbol so that we can do an electrical calculation.
Oh, okay.
Right? Every piece of wire has an inductance. Yeah? Okay. Sorry for the confusion. Okay. So now then we have the flux through the loop. And we reduce that. To a nice simple form. And so we can take the second order differential equation we had here, right? That still describes what happens here, okay? We can add that to this. And so now then we say, oh yes, phi is equal to alpha IDC times L minus I. And you know, I told myself I would avoid doing this, but I didn't. I in this diagram, of course, is IDC in this diagram, right? So sorry about that. But just, we didn't write out the full thing anyways. So now then we get, minus h bar c t there's an L there. A Okay, so now we have an expression for the total flux through that ring. But we know that the total flux through the ring still has this quantization, right? I only want an expression in terms of phi. I don't care about the total flux through the ring. Okay. And so we can rewrite this expression. Negative there. So that again we have a force. In this expression. Now notice that I dropped the n here, right? Because we're just going to let phi wrap around. So if we kept n, there would be a redundancy, or we'd have to say phi is equal to something between two points. Okay. Good. So now, given that we have this force, and if I don't write the right expression, we won't get the right answer. So phi dependence there. Given that we have this force, we can again take the negative derivative of the force. We can take the force to be the negative derivative of a potential. And we can write down a potential. So the potential now is a function of phi is equal to minus alpha IDC phi plus phi naught over pi L phi squared minus IC cosine theta. Okay. So now we've solved our problem, right? Because now we have a potential that we can then use as a Hamiltonian. It still has this periodic term, that's of course the critical current. It still has this tilt term, which we control, right? This is under our control. So we can control the tilt. And then it has this parabolic potential. So now then, when we look at this, we're going to end up with a unique, with one of the wells being at the unique lowest energy. Okay? So we look. I don't get this. Okay. Okay, so this is just an extension of the same notebook we were looking at this morning. We put in the potential. I put in some reasonable values. And then of course, if I take the critical current in alpha is the parameter for the asymmetry of this inductance, okay? So without any asymmetry and without any without any DC drive, of course, we just have this periodic structure. We add IDC and we see that there's a tilted potential. And of course, it appears because we're in this infinite square well that we could use this well. But of course, we're not. We're in reality, we're not in that position, so we can't use that. So we increase the parabolic dependence, and now we can create a situation where there is in fact a lowest energy state. And so now then we can run the system. I should have made these less sensitive. Come on. We can run the system having one lowest eigenstate, or in fact, having two. And we can see, we can go down, of course, and look at what the bound states are. But before we do that, let's ask how we want to map this to qubits. And there are lots and lots of ways of doing this. But here, what I want out of this is I want one qubit that's controllable. And remember that the only parameter we're going to be able to use is the bias current of the junction. That's the only parameter that we have access to. And so the way I like to do this is to simply start with a block sphere and choose some nice basis state, right? And so we'll say, okay, let's take that as a z-axis, and let's choose some nice basis states. Why don't we take these two wells, and then ask, let's tilt them a little bit. Since we have control, we apply it. Okay, so now we've got two pieces there. And we could say, oh yeah, what I want is in this case, and let me just draw the center two wells, right? It's going to be under, it's our obligation to get the numbers right in the end. That if we start off in this well, that the probability is never going to get here or there, right? We say, okay, we need to set the energetic so that that's true. We, in fact, can control the depth of these things as we design the chip. We can't control it after the fact. But in our design, we can control that. So we say, okay, there'll be an obligation. So let me just draw the middle two wells and say, okay, why don't we take that as one of the ground states. So I'd like to have a bound state in the left-hand well, and if it's fully populated, we'll map that to the zero state. So zero, we'd simply define as the ground state of the potential under some tilt, right? So let's call that case T, right? So it's the ground state in that tilted piece. And then here, if we're going to look along an axis, it's not required, but it certainly is much, much cleaner to not change the tilt as we look along the axis, right? And so I can say, oh yeah, I want this one to be here. Right, so say the one state, we would like that to be the second eigenstate under this tilted potential. And of course, we're saying something very clear here that I haven't said mathematically very well. I want those eigenstates to be confined to those wells. Right? And so now then we have a basis states, and we're saying, of course, look, these are the eigenstates under that particular Hamiltonian. So of course they better be orthogonal to each other, right? But we're asking something more than that. Yeah? We're saying that, hey, there's no overlap. If I have an eigenstate in this well, there's no overlap in that well. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, you have a question? We can have a lot. A lot experimentally is six. Usually we discuss it as though we have two or three, just so that we don't have to keep track of the rest. It's difficult to make this parabolic potential so steep that you could end up having more of this. But anyways, so absolutely, this isn't the only mapping. So we should say, oh yeah, what's another mapping afterwards? But let's finish up here. So then if we said we've got the X state, right? What do we want to put there? Well, of course, it should be a coherent superposition of those two, right? But it would be nice if we could get the X state to look like this in the untilted potential. Now there's a challenge in doing that, right? So now then I say, oh, in the untilted potential, I have psi. Let me write this out as tilt, just so you don't think I'm doing some mathematical thing there. And here we have no tilt, right? No tilt. We're saying that we would like to have psi 1 look like this. And what I would really like to do is to look at this in a different basis. So let's take psi 1 no tilt as equal to psi 1 plus psi 2 divided by the square root of 2 in the non-symmetrized basis, so that I have a wave function here and a wave function there. Okay? Now, of course, if we do that, we're demanding that E1n is equal to E2n. Right? That's the condition under which that would be true. Yeah? They have to be degenerate. And of course, if they're degenerate, we would like to take the symmetric combination of them, right? But what we would like here is to say that the overlap, psi 1 tilt, overlap psi 1 in this non-symmetric basis, right, We would like this thing to be one. Okay? And likewise, we would like the second one to be one. And if we could arrange that, then life would be pretty good. Because then I could diabatically go between these. Yeah? So this piece, again, is a requirement of the process. You have to find the parameters. And just a few minutes ago, I looked at this for this model and got... Okay. So 0.999984. So for a couple of trials after lunch, it's not too bad, right? If you can play around after lunch and get it, then you'll say okay. And this energy difference was 10 to the minus 45. Electron volts. So, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, the problem with this stuff is it's so funny. You can go and you can calculate it. And you say, oh, yeah, it takes exactly to be this, and it comes up to be zero, and life is great. And then you fabricate it, but you never fabricate really this, right? That, you know, you have finite resolutions on this, the materials properties change, and then, you know, all of your nice precision that you did your modeling doesn't survive into the fabrication. Then you make a bunch of them and you test them and you find the one that works, if one does. Okay. So now then, we're almost there, right? It says, fine, I've got the Z states defined under one particular potential that I can tilt. I can go to this particular set. Okay, and now I have a set of states defined along this axis in a different potential. So basically what this is going to do is allow me to do an operation. I'd like to be able to control the qubit. And you can see what happens. If I want to go around this way, then all I need to do is write a phase in one well. And life is really good, right? Because up here, under this potential, there's an energy difference between the wells. And so if I just leave them under that potential and allow them to rotate, I'll write a phase. Yeah? So I can wander around here, and it's exactly as it should be. I can wander around the XY plane by using the operation that is in this state. And if I want to change from here to here, well, I can do that as well. I want to apply this operation. I want to go to a state, I want to take this state and diabatically go here. And now the system has the same energy, it'll oscillate between those two. Okay? And so this action will allow me to go there. And so now we have one full qubit. Now, of course, this piece is designed so it allows us to say, hey, I can write this qubit in either of these bases. So it's a little bit hokey to say, oh, I'm going to have one basis along here and one basis along here. But it's not very hokey to say, ah, this is the operator along Z. And this is the operator. Along X. And so I can prepare my state in the ground state, assuming thermally. Then I can rotate it anywhere I like on the Bloch sphere. And of course, at every instant in time that the system is sitting there, it'll be rotating in some direction, right? It's never that it's going to be sitting quiet. It'll always see this operator or this operator. So it'll always be evolving in time. But that's okay, right? We don't require, remember that what we require of our qubit is that we have control. We don't actually require that the generators, that we have every generator of control. We require that we can go anywhere on the Bloch sphere. So it's okay that we don't have a generator that is the identity. I don't have a Hamiltonian that's zero, right? We'll always be able to go through. Okay. So now then we look at the particular states. So in this case, where they're set actually to be degenerate, but the program doesn't know enough to symmetrize it, we see that the two ground states are in fact the population in the two wells. That's nice. And that the excited state, the first excited state, would already take you between those two. And then we have a tilted version. We see that, in fact, the excited states remain clear. Oops. Much higher. We'll go back to these. So it's only once we get to the fourth excited state that there's some non-linear, some non-zero piece in the other well. Okay. So what do we have so far? We say, oh yeah, we can make a qubit. We can make it controllable. We can prepare it in its ground state. We can get the control over the system by a simple tilt of this washboard potential. We have universal control. And we can read out that qubit by tilting the washboard sufficiently that the phase runs at the... In these systems, you can tilt it. You say, oh, you've got this parabolic potential, but the parabolic potential eventually gives out, and you still get a voltage over the system. We have universality because we can rotate around the x and the y directions, right? So that gives us universe. What's that? Okay. So the way that we've modeled control here is to simply picture moving diabatically, so instantaneously, from this tilt to this tilt. Okay? And then what do we see? If we're tilted this way, then we're going to be rotating about the z-axis. And if we're tilted this way, we'll be rotating about the x-axis. And since we can rotate about two non-aligned axes, then we have universal control. And since we picture doing this diabatically, then the resolution is just our timing.
And then something else. So what's the difference between X and Y?
Between what?
X and Y.
Phase shift. So think about it effectively as just a phase shift in this well. Right? So it'd be 0 here, 92 etc. Yeah. And if I take that as a zero energy, then of course by jumping to this potential and allowing the system to evolve with time, exactly right that phase. Yeah. Okay. This is not the only way of doing this. It's probably not even a very nice way of doing it. But it's a very, very compact way. But it has these additional requirements that one doesn't like very much. So tell me another way you'd like to control it. Right? The control element we have remains the tilt of that potential. There's nothing else. There's no other control element. But of course, we could change the energetics when we build the device, anything you like. Say one more thing. Of course, this looks like we're doing effectively an occupancy, right? You could say, oh, imagine if I had two cavities and I didn't know which one the photon was in, right? I could prepare the cavities in a fiducial state by putting a photon in one or the other, and then I could create an entangled state by having some way of having a photon residing in somewhere in the two cavities without knowing in which one it actually was in. Yeah? So that's the sort of model that we have here for this system. Yeah. Do you have a suggestion for a qubit?
Can we change the resistance?
The resistance here is controlled by the leakage through the Josephson junction. So in fact, on this device, as we imagine it, we can't. Now, I can take a device that looks like this. Where this is actually a controllable resistor. And we have these two control elements. And in this system, notice I don't have, there's no loops, right? We haven't applied any flux quantization, right? But still in this system, we can map a qubit, and you can use a resistor if you like as a control element. So one can do that. It requires having a little bit more complicated device. And effectively, you can think about that if I take these two DC currents and I set them to the same, then basically I can end up coupling them to the strength that's allowed by this. And as I vary those, I effectively remove them. So it's like having two forced pendula that you have control over the coupling between those two. Okay? But let's get back to this. Here, we still have other means of writing a qubit. And in fact, there's no until you put until you put decoherence in a model, usually there's no means of saying one is better than the other, right? And so far, we haven't added any decoherence to this.
We can also change the flux using the
external. Absolutely, absolutely. See that you don't want to. To buy into my problem. But I can put a loop here with another current source. I can change the flux bias of this. And if I look at this potential, what does that do? It sort of shifts us back and forth along this axis. But we can do that as well. But let me try to be a bit more directive here. Right now we're only using one energy level in each of these wells. So what if we wanted to use two energy levels? Yeah.
You could use two energy levels in one well, and then you could have it set so that when you untilt it, it can slide over or something like that, and then you have another way of controlling it.
That's right. That we can say, let's use another. Let's use an excited state as a way of taking us between qubits. So if we had our block sphere again, and we could still imagine keeping our qubits in a definition of the well, but let me just draw it as a double well and define our qubit states as those excited, as those ground states. And let's draw the ground states. I mean, we're saying that the ground states, if we looked at the wave functions, look like that, right? And so that we're just going to populate this piece of it or that piece of it. Or if you like, do it over here. We could take the symmetric and the anti-symmetric parts of those and call those the basis states. Wouldn't actually make a difference in the analysis. But then if the excited state here had some overlap between those two, then when we went into an excited state, we would move between those, right? So this will say, that's psi 1 and this is psi 2 in that. Yeah. Now, it's you have to be a little bit careful here, right? Because here, if I have two wells, then I have this piece, and I can't have an excited state like that. I can have an excited state like that. Right, because there has to be a node in the. So I should be a little bit not so cavalier about this. And then, given this, we could rely upon that dynamic to carry us through. But we still have to get there, right? And so still we would need to change the tilt of the potential so that one would overlap with that, with states of that form, right? And so you'd end up having to tilt the potential more. I don't know if I have a picture for that. Sorry. I redid my notebook and took those out. Maybe I can show you here. No. No, let me not try to show you. Unfortunately, I even had that in the notebook, but took it out. So, but that's okay. I mean, one can, the higher the energy, of course, the more you're going to spread out over this, right? And the as you change the slope, you're going to involve more of those states, right? So you can calculate them that way. So we could use, so here we do everything in the ground state. Of tilted potentials. Here, we can excite, we can go to the excited states. We can use the excited states. But the only control that we've given ourselves is still to have these this tilted potential. Okay. Now, what we want to do, we want to do two things. One, of course, so far we've said we have one qubit. So we'd like to show you that we can bring more qubits into the problem. So we'll do that tomorrow. The other way of controlling these devices is we can connect directly to microwave transitions. We have to modify the device a little bit more. And I'm not going to show you that because what it really requires is putting three junctions in there. And so the math gets a little bit messy. But you can put a three-junction device such that when you want to jump between energy levels, you can do that directly with the microwave field. And so you don't have to change the quantization. You don't have to tilt anything. Just leave the tilt alone, jump. And so you have two separate controls. The tilt that would give you a phase shift and the microwaves that would give you an excitation. Yeah? Okay, so let's stop here. The piece that I want you to take away from this is, in fact, just the mapping, and to understand that with a particular mapping, you know, what's required of you is, of course, to come up with a way of controlling the system. And so the only piece that we really had to think about here was to say, hey, how do I find a system where I have two operators that are going to allow me to rotate over the whole block sphere? And second, what's the requirement so that I live in that subspace, right? That here we have an infinite number of energy levels, and so it's very easy to do something wrong and populate someplace in Hilbert space you're never going to find. And so you need to say, oh, yes, that there's a requirement that I want to live within the subspace, and therefore I need to make sure that as I change, whether it's adiabatically or diabatically, as I change the definition of my eigenstates, I'm not going to go someplace crazy. Yeah. So since there's only one qubit here, then I say, hey, no controls, no control gates, only one qubit. when we take a system like this, I put a capacitor here, then I'll have control over these two. So we'll talk about this on tomorrow. But then by putting in these shunts, we already will have the flux quantization. So we're in a system very much like this, where you have two qubits, okay? And by capacitively coupling them, we allow the current that flows through here to be a function of the voltage. And that's the interesting piece, right? Because the voltage we can connect to the phase of each of those qubits. Yeah? Okay, we'll see you tomorrow.